She sat in my office that day, a very dejected, frightened, angry young lady. As she stared at the floor and poured out her story, it was one which obviously could have been duplicated many times across the country. Her trembling voice was almost a whisper as she told me, "I cannot remember one single time when my father put his arms around me and told me that he loved me. So I went out and I found the best kind of love I could find." Those tear-choked words were from an unmarried, pregnant teenager. Was this troubled girl just dumping her problems on her father? Or was she verbalizing for a generation of women a real and significant truth? That evening, I went home with the insatiable desire to grab both of my daughters and hug them as long as I could and say to them over and over again how much I love them. I shared this little episode with some of my pastor friends and a couple of counselors I knew, and I found that there was consistent support for the discovery that I was making as a father. The discovery that many fathers do not have a close relationship with their daughters, and many of them don't really think it's important at all. For you see, dads are for sons, and moms are for girls. She's mommy's girl. That's what we've always thought, and that's what I thought. And yet I have come to believe, men and women, that the relationship between a father and his daughter is the most important relationship in the family, with the exception of the husband-wife relationship. Just as I was going through this experience, a man by the name of William Appleton released a book entitled Fathers and Daughters, and I bought it in a secular bookstore and read it from cover to cover. I was so hungry to learn. One place in the book he wrote, "For any woman, one very dominating influence is her father. He is the first man to whom she gives her heart, and how he reacts strongly affects her future with men." You see, a girl's father is the first man in her life and probably the most influential. Whether he is absent or involved, whether he is loving or rejecting, whether he is a good father or a bad father, he leaves a lasting impression upon the life of his daughter. Most women have not taken time to analyze their relationships with their fathers, and frankly, until recently, that relationship got very little attention in family studies. But today, it is being discovered again and again that that relationship is critical. I suppose one of the problems we have in our generation is the problem of identifying the roles of any parent. The terms for parenthood have become rather androgynous in our day. We mix them up together. It used to be that it was clearly understood that dad brought home the bacon and mom cooked it. It's not that easy anymore, is it? The roles have been confused, and sometimes because of that, if we are not careful, we lose sight of the important relationships that extend to the individual members of the parenting team. In a two-parent family, normally speaking, it is the father's responsibility to take the financial support of his family as his one focus in the workplace. It is a scriptural concept that is supported from 1 Timothy 5:8, where we are told that if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. A father has a first responsibility to care for the needs of his family. Fathers are for financial support, but they have other roles as well. Fathers also provide a sense of comfort and security in the family. One woman told me that her first childhood memory was of her father holding her and walking the floor after she had had a bad fall. And she said, "I can still feel his big shoulder and smell the cigars on his clothes. To this day, every time I smell a cigar, I think of my father's comforting love." I hope you have a better way of remembering that than she did, but What she was saying was that her father was a comfort to her in a time of need. Fathers are also for understanding. And that's a tough one, because more often we dads say, especially with regard to our daughters, "I just don't understand her." Perhaps it's because we haven't tried to understand. I admit that a girl isn't easy to figure out. She's a miniature woman. And no man alive would ever dare say that he understood women. Fathers are for comfort and for security and for financial wherewithal, but you know something else? Fathers are for fun. Sometimes I think we've forgotten that dads usually, if there's going to be entertainment and fun in the family, they have to take the responsibility for it. We have gotten so stodgy and stiff in our families that we've forgotten what it's like to have a good time. We just returned from 4 days in San Felipe, Mexico, with our family. I wasn't sure what I was getting into when I went down there, and all of my fears were realized. But I want to tell you something. We had the most fun we have ever had as a family. And we did some of the craziest things. Some of it has been recorded on film, and I am being blackmailed, I want you to know. But having fun is part of Dad's responsibility to make sure that family life is not all just serious business. Fathers should also be confidence builders. It's very important to understand that one of the things we provide for our families, whether it's to our daughters or to our sons, is the sense of well-being. One successful young businesswoman told me that after her father and mother divorced, she lived with her father from the time she was 6 until she was 15. And she said her father was so strict, and in his anxiety to be a good father, he tried to mold her into his concept of the perfect little lady. He consistently and constantly criticized her without ever offering any encouragement. And she said, "All I ever wanted to hear from him was, 'I'm really proud of you.'" She added fuel to her father's disapproval by dating men who were much older than she was. When she was 16, she was going with a guy who was 28. And by the time she was 20, her steady boyfriend was a man of 38, only 2 years younger than her father. Guess what she was looking for? She was looking for someone to take her father's role of encouragement and love in her life. Not only are fathers confidence builders, but we have to understand, too, men, that part of our job is to be role models. That's probably one of the hardest. There's something very conclusive about being a role model. You have to take the whole package as it is. I remember reading an article on how fathers influence their daughters, written by Dr. Alexandra Simons, who is an associate clinical professor of psychiatry at New York University. She made a study of women who had high commitments to work, and you know what she discovered? She discovered through most of her studies that the highest percentage of women who aspire to careers have been influenced by men, normally their fathers. In other words, when you look at a woman who has risen to the top in her chosen career, she has usually been promoted in that direction by the example and by the leadership of her own father. So as a role model, he sets the stage and goes before her to show her the way, even in the area of industry. I want you to know that as fathers, we're very important to our daughters. And I think when we see what a good father means to a girl, it will help us to be one and give us the desire to work at that relationship even more. I was reading and studying, and I came across some information about the daughters of some famous men. For instance, I read a story about Winston Churchill and his daughter. She wrote on one occasion, she said, "The greatest and the most powerful influence in my life was, of course, my father. Although I had talked with him so seldom and never for a moment on equal terms, I conceived an intense admiration and affection for him, and after his death, an affection for his memory. I read industriously almost every word that he had ever spoken, and I learned by heart large portions of his speeches. He seemed to own the key to everything, or almost everything, worth having. End of quote. There was a young lady who saw in her father everything worth having. What a role model he was for her. Another story that comes out of world history is the story of Nehru. His daughter, as you know, was Indira Gandhi. And she became the Prime Minister of India, the world's largest democracy and the country with the second largest population. And Indira Gandhi has been regarded as one of the outstanding women of this century. Let me tell you what affected her life. She said, although both parents were strong examples of intense loyalty to their motherland, it was her father's influence that formed the pattern for her life as a leader. He took a keen interest in her education and encouraged her to read and think for herself. While he was away, he carried on a great dialogue with her through the mail. He wrote long letters to her, and she wrote back. One of the most poignant stories about Indira Gandhi was related after she married and had a son. Her father had been arrested and was to be transferred from one prison to another. Indira's baby was only a few months old, and his grandfather had never seen him. So she learned the route that the car was taking, bearing her father, and she learned it would go over a certain bridge. And so at dusk, wearing a sari which her father had woven for her, she stood in a visible spot near the bridge and lifted the baby high above her head so that Nehru could catch a glimpse of his grandchild. A picture of her love and affection for the man who had made such an impact upon her life. And when India became independent and Nehru was elected as prime minister, Indira served as his hostess and later participated in policy making and vital decisions. Her father wove more than a sari for her. He designed the very fabric of her life. He had a tremendous impact upon her and her future. I must confess to you men and women that I am deeply concerned over the role of the father in our American culture today. The attempts on the part of the media to downgrade his influence, along with the feminist attack on his importance and worth, are the ingredients which are contributing to the weakening of our country. Name one program that you can think of where a father is held in respect instead of ridicule, where he is lifted up in honor instead of put down as a joke. There's a consistent conspiracy throughout our culture to hold a father in disrespect, because those who would destroy what we have as Americans understand that he is the most important ingredient in holding the family structure together. And if he is gone, families dissipate quickly. Yes, you are important, dads, not just to your sons. You touch the life of your daughter in many ways. And I'd like to suggest to you some of those ways that are very important. First of all, you as a father affect greatly the self-esteem of your daughter. I've had to learn that the hard way through mistakes that I have made. And I'd like to suggest to you that what a young lady thinks about herself is in a great respect a mirror of what she perceives her father to think of her. Maybe the best way I can communicate that to you is to illustrate it from a true story. A story that was written by Phyllis Thoreau, and Phyllis tells about herself as a preteen. She had just moved into a new neighborhood that was as lonely as the adolescence she was entering. The story caught my attention because I remembered that when we moved here to California, Jan, our oldest daughter, was in the seventh grade. She was entering the most difficult time in her life while she was making a major geographical and cultural change as well. Well, according to the story, this young lady in Phyllis Thoreau's article compensated for her misery by eating ice cream cones and candy bars in hidden binges. And her father called her his fat fairy, an endearment that was not very dear to her. So she would stage hunger strikes, locking herself in her room during the day and sneaking down to the kitchen to devour a whole loaf of Wonder Bread at one time. As the fat accumulated, so did her misery. When she was in the sixth grade, invitations were sent out for a formal father-daughter dance at the school she attended. Now, obviously, this is a secular story. Her mother got a special dress worn only twice from her cousin Mimi. As Phyllis looked at this limp, uninspiring dress, which accentuated her pudgy frame, she decided she didn't want to go to the dance at all. However, her father had realized what he had done to destroy her self-esteem, and as a wise and repentant father, he presented her with something she never forgot. He took the day off and he traipsed in and out of unfamiliar department stores to find two dresses he thought might be right. And Phyllis said, "I cannot think about what those boxes contained without feeling the same disbelief that overcame me then. I opened the first and out sprang a pink net formal covered with tiny stars. Out of the second box came a pale blue net dress with white daisies embroidered all over the full skirt. Suddenly, the room was full of white tissue and hope." Years later, Phyllis wrote a tender story called The Father-Daughter Dance. It's a full-length book, and I have it. It's a tribute to what a father can do to a little girl's self-esteem with one simple gesture. And she wrote in the book these words about her dad. "He was, of course, the handsomest, without doubt, and the first prince in my life to come through, unwittingly setting me up for every other prince who was delayed in transit until later on. One night does not melt away adolescence, but I am glad I have it to look back to. It confirms my deepest feelings about my father, who confirmed my deepest hopes for myself. That night was full of light, contentment, and store-bought stars, and I don't know how to repay my father for it except to tell the story and let it stand on its own like a new dress." End of quote. What that father did in the beginning was to tear down his daughter's self-esteem, but what he did in the end was to put it back together. Men, our girls weigh our words way out of proportion to what they really are. And what we say to them makes the difference. One of the challenges we face as men, if we're honest, and maybe I should just speak for myself, is that if you have sons, it's hard to keep it in balance. Let me just give you an illustration from my own family. I have two boys, and both of them are very caught up in athletics. And I'm very caught up in athletics. We're kind of sports nuts. And I have a little girl by the name of Jennifer who's a very good athlete, and she loves athletics. But then we have Jan. Jan is just a whole different personality. She is the melancholy in our family. She's an artist. She's a poet. She's a writer. She's creative. She's gifted. She's beautiful. But she's not into sports. Now, what am I supposed to do with that? I mean, I'm not into poetry. I can't even draw flies. And you know something, men and women, I need to confess to you. For several years as a father, I blew it badly. Just because I didn't understand how important it was that I go the extra mile to reach into that young lady's life and get excited about what she was excited about. A father has a first responsibility to care for the needs of his family. Fathers are for financial support, but they have other roles as well. Fathers also provide a sense of comfort and security in the family. One woman told me that her first childhood memory was of her father holding her and walking the floor after she had had a bad fall. And she said, "I can still feel his big shoulder and smell the cigars on his clothes. To this day, every time I smell a cigar, I think of my father's comforting love." I hope you have a better way of remembering that than she did. But what she was saying was that her father was a comfort to her in a time of need. Fathers are also for understanding. And that's a tough one because more often we dads say, especially with regard to our daughters, "I just don't understand her." Perhaps it's because we haven't tried to understand. I admit that a girl isn't easy to figure out. She's a miniature woman. And no man alive would ever dare say that he understood women. Fathers are for comfort and for security and for financial wherewithal, but you know something else? Fathers are for fun. Sometimes I think we've forgotten that dads usually, if there's going to be entertainment and fun in the family, they have to take the responsibility for it. We have gotten so stodgy and stiff in our families that we've forgotten what it's like to have a good time. Having fun is part of dad's responsibility to make sure that family life is not all just serious business. Fathers should also be confidence builders. It's very important to understand that one of the things we provide for our families, whether it's to our daughters or to our sons, is the sense of well-being. One successful young businesswoman told me that after her father and mother divorced, she lived with her father from the time she was 6 until she was 15. And she said her father was so strict, and in his anxiety to be a good father, he tried to mold her into his concept of the perfect little lady. He consistently and constantly criticized her without ever offering any encouragement. And she said, all I ever wanted to hear from him was, I'm really proud of you. She added fuel to her father's disapproval by dating men who were much older than she was. When she was 16, she was going with a guy who was 28. And by the time she was 20, her steady boyfriend was a man of 38, only 2 years younger than her father. Guess what she was looking for? She was looking for someone to take her father's role of encouragement and love in her life. Not only are fathers confidence builders, but we have to understand, too, men, that part of our job is to be role models. That's probably one of the hardest. There's something very conclusive about being a role model. You have to take the whole package as it is. I want you to know that as fathers, we're very important to our daughters. And I think when we see what a good father means to a girl, it will help us to be one and give us the desire to work at that relationship even more. I must confess to you men and women that I am deeply concerned over the role of the father in our American culture today. The attempts on the part of the media to downgrade his influence, along with the feminist attack on his importance and worth, are the ingredients which are contributing to the weakening of our country. Name one program that you can think of where a father is held in respect instead of ridicule, where he is lifted up in honor instead of put down as a joke. There's a consistent conspiracy throughout our culture to hold a father in disrespect, because those who would destroy what we have as Americans understand that he is the most important ingredient in holding the family structure together. And if he is gone, families dissipate quickly. Yes, you are important, dads, not just to your sons. You touch the life of your daughter in many ways. And I'd like to suggest to you some of those ways that are very important. First of all, you as a father affect greatly the self-esteem of your daughter. I've had to learn that the hard way through mistakes that I have made. And I'd like to suggest to you that what a young lady thinks about herself is in a great respect a mirror of what she perceives her father to think of her. Men, our girls weigh our words way out of proportion to what they really are. And what we say to them makes the difference. One of the challenges we face as men, if we're honest, and maybe I should just speak for myself, is that if you have sons, it's hard to keep it in balance. Let me just give you an illustration from my own family. I have two boys, and both of them are very caught up in athletics. And I'm very caught up in athletics. We're kind of sports nuts. And I have a little girl by the name of Jennifer who's a very good athlete, and she loves athletics. But then we have Jan. Jan is just a whole different personality. She is the melancholy in our family. She's an artist. She's a poet. She's a writer. She's creative. She's gifted. She's beautiful. But she's not into sports. Now, what am I supposed to do with that? I mean, I'm not into poetry. I can't even draw flies. And you know something, men and women, I need to confess to you. For several years as a father, I blew it badly. Just because I didn't understand how important it was that I go the extra mile to reach into that young lady's life and get excited about what she was excited about. I remember when we went to the Dominican and Jan was enrolled in school there for her senior year. I was never going to let her go down to that foreign country by herself, so I took her. And it was awful. It was very difficult. And we had never been to the Dominican Republic before, never been in Santo Domingo before. We're not prepared for what we were about to find. We landed at the airport and rented a car, hoping to find our way to Jarabacoa, where the school was located. But we had no idea where it was. And we almost didn't get out of the city. We got lost in the produce section of Santo Domingo, where all the big trucks were. And we kept going round and around, and we couldn't get out. And there was a young lady who was also from this church who was already enrolled in that school, and Jan desperately wanted to see her, and there was only a short period of time when she could do that, and the time was getting away from us, and so she was in tears, and I was frustrated, and we didn't know where we were going. We finally found our way out of the produce section, got on the right road to Jarabacoa, and just as we were making good time, one of the Dominican truck drivers decided that he would turn into our lane and occupy the place where we were. And he wiped out our little rental car, just pushed it right off the road, put a huge dent in it. And I assumed the police would come, but the police don't attend accidents in the Dominican. There are too many of them. Every car in the Dominican Republic looks like it has had four or five accidents that very day. Most of them have no bumpers. They have dents in them. And here I was, I didn't know what to do, so the car would run, and we got in the car. She was now frustrated and in tears. Now I'm crying. I don't know what to do. And with tears coming down both of our faces, we drove all the way up into the mountains to that school. It was an intense time. And you know what? When we talk about it now, we crack up. But it wasn't a crack-up experience then, let me tell you. It was intense. When Jan came home from school, I flew to Miami to meet her. There was just something about just wanted to be there when she got back into this country. And I took her to school for her first time. And I wish I could make up some of the time that I lost when I didn't understand how important a father's relationship is to his daughter. I'm doing better the second time around. But I'd like to share with you, fathers, as you look over your responsibility in your home, don't you buy the myth that dads are for sons, though they are. And moms are for daughters. Yes, they are. Dads are for daughters, too. In fact, as you look through the life of a father and his daughter, you go through several stages. It begins with what we call the infancy stage. I saw a coach write the other day, and they just had their first child. And I have to tell you this. As soon as I saw him, I knew the baby was here. You know why? He had a little spot right here on his coat. Did you notice that? I remember those days. I had almost forgotten that. I said, Randy, I can tell you're a dad. You've got a little spot right there on your coat. All of our coats had, you know, where you carry the child. And you know, those days when you have a little girl are special. I remember taking Jan and Jennifer to the grocery store and, you know, going through the checkout counter and have this beautiful little girl. And they'd say, is that yours? You know, like that, you know, like they couldn't believe it, that child belonged to you. And, those are special days. When Jan was little, she had colic from 10 o'clock until 2 o'clock every night. We really got acquainted in those days. I would come home from work and usually had a meeting. I'd get home and Donna would say, well, it's time for the night shift, and she'd give her to me, and then she'd go in the back room, you know. And so I walked the floor with Jan. We lived in a house in Fort Wayne, and it had kind of a route that went through the living room into the dining room into the kitchen and back out, just kind of a circle. So I did laps at night from 10 till 2. You just did laps. I counted the laps. How many laps will it take for her to quit crying tonight? Those are the infancy stages. Then you go through the childhood stage. And in the childhood stage, what happens is your daughter will idolize you. That's a very important time in her life. In fact, I remember reading about Suzanne Fields, who tells when she was five how she married her dad in a mock ceremony, wearing her best party dress and a pink corsage, attended by her mother as matron of honor and her brother as the rabbi. Fields said she started school and her world expanded beyond the house where daddy lived. And then when people would tell the story about how she married her daddy, she would be very embarrassed. But you see, for many little girls, life with father is a dress rehearsal for love and marriage. Feelings are so intense during childhood that most people can't vividly remember vignettes from their early years. But you see, your father is the one you idolize, and he is going to set the stage for the person you end up marrying. Isn't it interesting, and probably you've observed this, that quite often when a young person is born into a home where perhaps there may be an alcoholic father, have you ever noticed that the daughter in that family will go out and marry a man who has the same tendencies, and before you know it, you're looking at the very same thing repeated over again? Why is that? That is a subtle way of reminding us all as fathers that we're setting the stage for the kind of person our daughter is going to marry. Isn't that an awesome responsibility? Doesn't that seem kind of unfair sometimes? But it's true. The next stage in the father-daughter relationship is what you might call the stage of conflict. It begins along the teenage years, and I'm not trying to grow it into a realization. It's just true. The first conflict at this stage usually starts with appearance. Father's idea of proper, stylish attire may be a bit outmoded in his daughter's eyes. Daughter follows the crowd with whatever is in, and poor dad groans and makes subtle remarks like, "You're going to school in that? You got to be kidding." And his former little girl, who idolized him a few months ago, now bristles like a porcupine. And authority meets stubbornness, and the winner loses the argument, and most fathers have said more than once, "You can't win." From clothes to makeup to curfew hours and boyfriends, the age of conflict begins with small skirmishes, and it can develop into a full-scale war if it isn't halted. And those warm, positive feelings of childhood begin to slide as the girl discovers the growing world of temptation. So these are the stages you go through, and most of us understand that. When we look at the influence we have on our daughters and the potential for that influence, it makes you wonder, how have we allowed this to slip by unnoticed? I believe it's been one of the strategies of the enemy of the family to blur the importance of a father's relationship with his daughter. So you say, "Pastor Jeremiah, who does make the best dad? How can you be a good father?" Let me just talk with you for a few moments as we close about who makes the best father. I think some of you girls probably think Daddy Warbucks would be a good example, you know, or Daddy Deep Pockets, however you want to call him. Daddy Warbucks gave little Annie everything her heart desired. But you know what? There have been some very interesting studies done recently to prove. In fact, let me just cite one study done by the Ladies Home Journal in cooperation with the Gallup people. They did a survey a few years ago, and the results showed that college-educated and economically better-off fathers, although they could provide their daughters with material and intellectual advantages, spent the least amount of time with them, do the least things for them, and seem the least outwardly loving. End of quote. On the other hand, a woman who compared her husband to her father said, "My father never went to college and he worked hard to earn a living and he made time for me and my sister. My husband has it a lot easier, but he spends all his free time at sports. If he could just turn our daughter into an athlete, he'd be glad to spend time with her." End of quote. Next, the survey showed that the father who was most satisfied with the job he did as a parent is likely to have a good marriage and vice versa. It's a fearsome thing to try to describe the good traits of a father. I stand before the four Jeremiah children in all of my vulnerability. I don't want my kids to think I could ever replace God in their lives. That's a terrible, terrible thing for them to think. And while fathers blunder, we understand that God the Father stands firm. He never makes a mistake. He is infallible. He loves unconditionally. I think sometimes like Thomas Howard. I just read this. Thomas Howard said, "I will write no books or articles on successful fatherhood, at least not until I'm 90 and both my children have turned out to be aging saints and have raised their own crops of mature saints. Any time before that is too soon." I identify with that. But I guess I need to say that in spite of the fact that I feel vulnerable and inadequate and have admitted to you over and again that a lot of the things I've learned about the family have come through the mistakes I have made, I do pray that God will protect my children in spite of my mistakes and give me the opportunity to make up for lost time. I want to be the kind of dad who not only provides the steadying hand, but also holds the life-saving net and encourages my children to grow. And you know, I'm very sensitive to the fact that as we talk about these very important subjects of the family, that some of you are here and you're thinking, "Pastor Jeremiah, my kids are grown. My daughter's already gone. She's married, or she's going to be a senior, or she's in college, and what am I to do now?" And I just want to tell you that there's always hope. There's never a time when you should give up hope and refuse to change the direction which has been a part of your life. I remember reading Charlie Shedd, who has a wonderful book on fatherhood, tell about a dad who knocked on his daughter's door one night soon after she'd gone to bed. And when she told him to come in, he sat down on her bed and he made a little speech that went something like this. He said, "Vicky, I want to apologize. I want you to know I'm sorry for a silly thing I've done. You're a senior in high school now, and all these years I've been saying that someday I'd take time for us to get acquainted. So here you are with 9 months left at our house. Then you'll be going away to college and getting married, and Lord only knows how far we'll be from each other. So I want to ask you to do me a favor. Once every week in this senior year, I'd like to take you alone for a meal so we can have time to talk together. I know you're busy evenings and I can't get away for lunch, but maybe we can get up early and go out for breakfast, just the two of us. That's the invitation. Take some time to think it over and let me know how you feel." End of quote. Well, I don't know what Vicky said, but I have a feeling she said yes. And when I read that for the first time, I did exactly that with my daughter. I started taking Jan out to breakfast. Now, that's a good thing to do. You can go to very, very exquisite places, and it doesn't cost as much. I would recommend breakfast. I mean, you have a hard enough time affording taking your wife out very often. Now you got two women to take care of. So, you know, your daughter gets breakfast, your wife gets dinner. I think that's fair, don't you? Right. But we have been to almost every one of the major hotels down by the shore for breakfast. And we've shared some of the most wonderful times that I will remember the rest of my life. You need to take time. Your daughter needs her dad. There's a song by Steve and Annie Chapman. It goes like this. "Daddy, you're the man in your little girl's dreams. You are the one she longs to please. And there's a place in her heart that can only be filled by her daddy's love. But if you don't give her the love she desires, she'll try someone else, but they won't satisfy her. And if your little girl grows up without daddy's love, she may feel empty. And it's only because it's her daddy's love that she's looking for. Don't send her away to another man's door. Nobody else can do what you do. She just needs her daddy's love." Have you given your little girl her daddy's love? If you haven't, will you tell her that you love her and that she's the most precious girl in the world to you? It's never too late to do that. The time now is to repair those weak threads in a father-daughter relationship. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, he says, "If you wait for perfect conditions, you will never get anything done." And he was right. So, Dad, make a date now with that very important woman in your life, your daughter. No, dads aren't just for sons. Dads are for daughters, too.